I am Pierre Lumumba here at the Swara Acacia Conservancy in Machakos County in the Republic of Kenya. We continue with our conversations about the continent of Africa and some prominent post-colonial leaders in Africa. And today we talk about Gamal Abdel Nasser Hussein. This great man, from what is now known as Egypt, is unique. Unique in the sense that he is considered a pan-Arabist and a pan-Africanist. Gamal Abdel Nasser became prominent in 1952 when he led young military officers to overthrow the administration of King Farouk I. It is instructive that when he led the push, what he did was to allow Mohamed Naguib to be the first president of post-monarchy Egypt. A few years later, in 1954, he became Egypt's second president after overthrowing the administration of Mohamed Naguib. And that is when Gamal Abdel Nasser becomes unique. Unique in the sense, if we backpedal a little, that when he overthrew King Farouk, individuals within his rank, such as the third president of Egypt, Anwar al-Sadat, had wanted that Farouk be executed, but Nasser said no. He said, let us allow him to go into exile. And therefore, when he succeeds Naguib, he's already established himself as a unique individual. And his uniqueness is in the desire to create an Egypt which is different. And he names Egypt the United Arab Republic in his short union with Syria between 1958 and 1961. But a lot of things happened during that period because Gamal Abdel Nasser has attracted enemies. So that in 1954, there is an attempt to assassinate him by the Muslim Brotherhood, but it does not succeed. And he begins to do things that are unique. Unique in the sense that they are designed to ensure that Egypt, which has hitherto been dominated by the British, regains not only political independence, but also regains economic independence. And it is in this context that in 1956, in the month of July, he seizes the Suez Canal. The Suez Canal, up till that point, had been run by an Anglo-French company who were charging the fees for the ships that were passing through the Suez Canal. And the Suez Canal was very important because it shortened the journey across to Europe so that ships did not have to use the Cape of Good Hope down in South Africa. And in doing that, Gamal Abdel Nasser establishes himself in the hearts of what is sometimes referred to as the Arab streets. He becomes a pan-Arabist whose agenda is to ensure that the people gain some foothold and become participants in the economic agenda. In 1962, Gamal Abdel Nasser established a universal health care, and that is unique in the entire Arab world. And he does not stop there. He begins to think of how to generate electricity and how to ensure that economic activities are at a different level. It is noteworthy that as early as 1932, there had been a plan to build an iron and steel factory. But that does not happen until Gamal Abdel Nasser enters into an arrangement with the administration of the then Soviet Union and Russia, by extension, to build Helwan iron and steel factory, which at that time remained the biggest steel factory and iron factory in the entire continent of Africa, and still is the biggest in the continent of Africa. At the same time, Gamal Abdel Nasser enters into an arrangement for the building of one of the biggest hydroelectric dams in the continent of Africa. The design is by the Germans. The Americans say that they are going to help Gamal Abdel Nasser build it, but they don't. And that is when he turns to the Soviet Union, to the Russians, and Aswan High Dam is then built on the River Nile and remained one of the biggest dams in the continent of Africa until very recently, and contributes monumentally to power generation in the land of Egypt. You see, Nasser is unique. Unique in the sense that he believes that the Arabs must unite. And it is instructive that in 1963, a man called Yosef actually makes a movie comparing Nasser with Saladin. And those who know Saladin, remember that Saladin was the great conqueror who conquered Jerusalem and resisted the Christian crusaders until the Lionheart Crusade and the Third Crusade. That is when Saladin is defeated. So to compare Nasser with Saladin is to mean that he is a great man. But something happens which dampens the spirit of Gamal Abdel Nasser. And we have to come to it before we go back to his Pan-Africanism. In 1967, during the Seven-Day War with Israel, the Israelis decimate the entire Egyptian army, of course, is then known as the United Arab Republic. And Nasser does not quite appreciate the gravity. At that time, the general is Nasser. It is when Sadat tells him that we cannot win this war because the Israelis are already almost in occupation of Sharm el-Sheikh, that the war is then concluded within 7 days and they surrender and the Israelis have occupied the Sinai. And he says in his famous speech, in which he says, this is Nasca, this is the great setback. And he resigns, or says that I'm going to resign. And then there are riots across the Arab world, and they are telling him, you cannot resign. You are our leader. And of course, he goes back to office. But before that, something else had happened. Number one, the union between Egypt and Syria collapsed, and the United Arab Republic remains only an Egyptian thing. And before that, in as much as he's talking about pan-Arabism and is in dalliance with the Saudis, in dalliance with the Syrians, in dalliance with the Yemenis with whom he prosecutes and fights a war, he is, on the other hand, also involved in the pan-African movement. And it is instructive that when he joined the Pan-African movement immediately after Ghana regains independence, and this comes in 1957, when Kwame Nkrumah on the day of independence says that the independence of Ghana means nothing if the rest of Africa is not free, immediately there is a rapport between him and the Osagyefo Kwame Nkrumah. And in the run-up to the meeting in Addis Ababa, there is a meeting, of course, in 1958 in Accra, Ghana. There is a meeting in Casablanca, Morocco in 1960. And Africa, or Black Africa, is divided. There are the former French colonies led by Félix Houphouët-Boigny and others who form the Monrovia Group and the Brazzaville Group and the Casablanca Group, who say that Africa must unite now. And at that time, there is an understanding. There is almost a failure of African unity. And that is when Nasser and Nkrumah and, of course, Haile Selassie then unite. Because Nasser says, we can have a meeting in Cairo in 1963. Nkrumah also says, we can have a meeting. And we can have that meeting in Accra, Ghana. And Haile Selassie comes in and attends a Monrovia meeting. I think the meeting is held in Monrovia, and then the next meeting is then held in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. And when you talk about the foundation of the Pan-African movement, therefore, you see Nasser there, you see Nkrumah there, you see Haile Selassie there, you see Ahmed Sekou Touré there, you see Nyerere there. And that is how then in 1964, One of the most iconic meetings is then held in Cairo, Egypt, and the host is Gamal Abdel Nasser. Abdel Nasser remains, and there is a sense in which he is a very interesting character. He's brought in the social revolution, the economic revolution, the economy of Egypt is doing very well, but there are also restrictions. He is being accused of being an authoritarian because he does not allow free press. He's being accused of somebody who wants to rule forever. And many things are said about Gamal Abdel Nasser, but he's also ailing. And many of you have read about him. He was one of the heaviest chain smokers that the Arab world has ever seen, as they say. And of course, what happens is that in 1970, Gamal Abdel Nasser suffers a stroke and dies. And when he dies, of course, Anwar al-Sadat takes over, which then begs the question, how do we remember Nasser? We remember Nasser as a pan-Arabist. We remember Nasser as a person who at one time was even being accused of anti-Semitism. And he was being accused of anti-Semitism because after the Seven-Day War, he does not stop there. He begins what is normally referred to as the War of Attrition, beginning to fight the Israelis and whom they call the Zionists with a view to recapturing the Sinai. And he begins to support Yasser Arafat, Abu Ammar, who then is the leader of the Palestinian Liberation Organization. And the whole idea is to liberate Palestine and, of course, to ensure that the Israelis don't have any presence in Egyptian territory of what is described as Arab territory. His credentials as a pan-Arabist really cannot be faulted. He is also to be remembered as an economic warrior who was anti-imperialist. And his anti-imperialism is seen in the 1956 seizure of the Suez Canal, when indeed the British and the French do attack Egypt, but they are neutralized. And they are neutralized effectively, and the Suez Canal is then owned by the British. He is to be understood, therefore, as an economic warrior. And of course, the Helwan steel and iron plant and the Aswan High Dam, and the agrarian revolution that takes place. He's also to be remembered as one of the leaders of the non-aligned movement, together with Tito, Nehru, Nkrumah, and Sukarno. And he's in the forefront of the non-aligned movement. He too is a pan-Africanist. And when we talk about the founding of the Organization of African Unity, it is instructive that he belonged to the Casablanca group that said independence now. He is also remembered to have brokered the relationship between Nkrumah and his wife Fathia, that on the eve of the independence of Ghana, he sends Fathia to Ghana and Nkrumah marries her immediately. And indeed, in 1966, when Nkrumah is overthrown, he does offer accommodation for Nkrumah's children, as does Ahmed Sekou Touré to Nkrumah himself. So this is an individual who recognized, and he said it himself, that pan-Arabism and pan-Africanism are not mutually exclusive. They are things that must continue apace because the spirit is to resist the imperialists. The spirit is to ensure that the African continent in which Egypt belongs must be rescued and protected from the diabolical machinations, particularly of the Western world. And that is why Nasser is remembered very fondly. And it is to be remembered that at a time when the administration of Hosni Mubarak was doing very badly, parties emerged which were called the Nasserite parties. That is Gamal Abdel Nasser, a pan-Arabist, a pan-Africanist, and a great man whom history cannot but remember fondly, Gamal Abdel Nasser Hussein. Our discussion on Matters Africa continue. There are many issues that deserve attention. So we have covered what we can this day, but we come back again. Goodbye, and see you as we continue the conversation.